number 20. If you were not here this morning in church, we begin the first 30 verses in 1 Kings chapter 20. Talked about how he's still God even in the valleys. And the last 11, 12 verses we're going to look at tonight teaches us an important, valuable lesson that God used a prophet to teach to Ahab. And tonight talks a little bit about responsibilities that God gives us and the importance of staying focused. And I think it's really kind of an interesting story, kind of interesting parable in the story. And I think you're going to enjoy tonight. 1 Kings chapter number 20. I'm going to begin in verse number 30. We saw this morning, if you were not here, God and his mercy and his kindness dealt favorably with the nation of Israel, even though Ahab had done much wickedness and led the people into worshiping a false god of Baal. God still showed his power and his might and his desires by allowing the nation of Israel with a very small army to defeat an army of full of over 32 different kings and their people. Over probably hundreds of thousands. Somebody came out today, he says, well, you think about it, 32 different people, 32 different kings, might have been an army of a million. Don't really know how many, but it was quite a few people that God gave this great victory over. And after all this, what would you think Ahab would do? Many of us would think, well, Ahab's seen fire come down from heaven, seen an army of 7,000 beating an army of over 100,000, and another small army beating even probably a greater size army. Ahab would be worshiping God. Ahab would be saying, God, what is it you want me to do? He'd be repenting. He'd be excited about what God has been doing. But we're going to learn in the stories to come, Ahab never recognizes God as God. He never sees him as God, never trusts him as God. And because of that, he gets comfortable with sin. And because of that, he allows Ben-Hadad to get away. So let's pick up here in verse number 30. He says, but the rest fled, and this is the end of the story about the second war, but the rest fled to Aphek into the city. And there a wall fell upon 27,000 of the men that were left. And Ben-Hadad fled and then came into the city into an inner chamber. So he's hiding there. And he's looking at he's trying to get away. His army's been defeated. Usually what the other kings would do is they would capture the king and they would torture them or at least put them to death. And his servant said unto him, now this is Ben-Hadad's servant speaking to Ben-Hadad, behold, now we have heard that the kings of the house of Israel are merciful kings. Let us, I pray thee, put sackcloth on our loins and ropes upon our heads and go out to the king of Israel. Preventure, he will save thy life. They're saying, hey, let's pretend that we're sorry. Let's make it look like we're very sorrowful. Let's put the sackcloth on. Let's put ropes on. And remember, this is the Ben-Hadad that was not happy with King Ahab just getting in the gold, the silver, his wives and his children. King Ben-Hadad wanted so much more. He was arrogant, and he really felt like he deserved any and everything that was coming to him. But here you see it's a completely different story than in verse number 10. Verse 32 says, they girded sackcloth on their loins and put ropes on their heads and came to the king of Israel and said, thy servant Ben-Hadad saith, I pray thee, let me live. And he says, is he yet alive? He is my brother. So Ahab is saying this about a Gentile king who was trying to destroy the nation of Israel and take away all the different things of Israel, but also kill all the people of Israel. He says, is he still alive? He's my brother. He's just like I am. So he remember, he's going from over here in verse number 10. He's saying, look, there's no way you're going to be able to beat us, and he wants to destroy Israel. Now he's saying, oh, look, he's my brother. He's alive. Let's see what Ahab does with him. He says, verse 33, now the men did diligently observe whether any things would come from him and did hastily catch it. And they said, thy brother Ben-Hadad. Then he said, go ye, bring him. Then Ben-Hadad came forth to him, and he caused him to come up into his chariot. And Ben-Hadad said unto him, the cities which my father took from thy father, I will restore. And thou shalt make streets. Now, some of the commentators are talking about saying that's businesses, not actually streets we would walk in, but businesses for thee in Damascus, in a different area than just Samaria, as my father made in Samaria, in the area that they were in. Then said Ahab, I will send thee away with this covenant. So he made a covenant with him and sent him away. So Ahab said, Ben-Hadad, you can live because you said you'd do these things. I'm going to send you away peacefully. Now, most of us would say, hey, Ahab's being a pretty nice guy. But there's something that was missed here. God had told him that he wanted him destroyed. Where do you see that? Well, let's look up here. It says in verse 35, "And a certain man of the sons of the prophets said unto his neighbor in the word of the Lord, smite me, I pray thee. And the man refused to smite him." And this is kind of interesting. So the guy goes up to his neighbor, and the neighbor would know that he was a prophet. And he says, in the name of the Lord, I want you to smite me. I want you to hit me. And the guy said, no, I don't want to do that. And it shows you here, we should obey the word of the Lord, because this guy gets punished for not obeying the word of the Lord. And it says, then said he unto them, because thou hast not obeyed the voice of the Lord, behold, as soon as thou art departed from me, a lion shall slay thee. And as soon as he was departed from him, a lion found him and slew him. So I guess we see the importance of obeying God's word and what's said in the voice of the Lord. Verse 37, then he found another man and said, smite me, I pray thee. And the man smote him, so that in smiting he wounded him. He said, why in the world would this happen? The thought here, I believe, is this prophet is going to portray himself as a wounded soldier, and that the wound that would be on his face would be something that showed he was been part of the battle. So the prophet departed and waited for the king by the way. So he's on the road, he's waiting for the king to come by, and he disguised himself with ashes upon his face, so he would not be known to the king. And the king passed by, and he cried unto the king, and he said, thy servant went out into the midst of the battle. And behold, a man turned aside and brought a man unto me, and said, keep this man. If by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. So what's the picture it's giving here? That he went out to the battle. One of his, we assume, his commanding officers captures someone of importance from the other nation, brings him to him and says, here, I want you to take care of this man. He is now your prisoner. If you let this prisoner get away, then it will cost you your life or an extremely large amount of money. And he continues on speaking to the king. And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. And the king of Israel said unto him, so shall thy judgment be, thyself hast decided it. So he says, I was busy doing this, I was busy doing that, and by the time I realized it, my opportunity, my responsibility was gone. And he's saying, what should happen to me? And he says, look, you've already said what should happen to you. It's already been decided. In verse 41, he hasted and took the ashes from his face. And I could see him cleaning his face up. And the king of Israel discerned him that was of the prophets. So it might have been one of the prophets in the earlier chapter that told him that they were going to win the battle, on a couple different occasions. There's three different men of God that had come. Also, it still could have been Elijah. We don't know why they wouldn't use Elijah's name here, so it's probably a prophet we don't know, but would have been known to Ahab. And he said unto him, thus saith the Lord, because thou hast let go out of thy hand a man who I appointed to utter destruction. So God had told them that Ben-Hadad needed to be destroyed. Therefore, thy life shall go for his life, and thy people for his people. So what does Ahab do? Is he sorrowful? Does he realize his mistake? Does he repent and ask for God's mercy? He doesn't. What does he do in verse 43? And the king of Israel went to his house, heavy and displeased, and came to Samaria. So let's look a little bit tonight at this thought, busy here and there. Busy here and there. If I was going to look at one verse, specifically being the theme verse, it would be verse number 40. When the servant was busy here and there, he was gone. The first thing I want you to think is God-given responsibilities. God-given responsibilities. Hey, we all have responsibilities. God gives all of us certain responsibilities, certain things he expects us to do. Depending on what realm you're in and depending on what relationship you have, he gives responsibilities to husbands and fathers. He gives them to wives and mothers. He gives them to children and the grandchildren. And he gives them to great-grandchildren. He gives church members certain responsibilities. He gives workers certain responsibilities. He gives children of the Lord certain responsibility. He gives grandparents responsibilities. He gives specific things that he expects from every individual. And then he gives certain things he expects from every believer. There's responsibilities that God gives us. So in the story here, you see here, this man was out in battle, and we assume it's one of his commanding officers. Why would it be one of his commanding officers? Why would you listen to anybody else? If somebody was the same rank comes up and tells you, hey, you need to do this, you don't have to obey. He probably wouldn't be in trouble for not obeying. But one of his officers come up to him and says, hey, I got a job for you. I have a responsibility I want to give you, and it is your responsibility to take care of this prisoner. Just as God comes to us and says, hey, I got a responsibility for you. I got something I want you to do. We don't mind the responsibilities. Many times we say, okay, it's good that we have responsibilities. Sometimes we even say, it's good when kids have responsibilities. It's good when adults have responsibilities. It's good when we have a purpose. There's something for us to do. But not only does he speak of responsibility here, he speaks of accountability too. He says to them, and he tells them up front, that he said in verse number 39, he says, keep this man, if by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver. So he's saying, look, not only do you have a responsibility, you have an accountability that you will be held to. You'll be held responsible for this. And even though we don't mind responsibilities, we do not many times like it when somebody holds us accountable for those responsibilities. I don't know many people who don't mind, hey, I don't mind doing this, I'll do this. But when something is done wrong and someone has to come up to you and say, hey, this isn't what we talked about, there is something that we have to hold you accountable to, sometimes people get grumpy. Sometimes people don't like it when someone reminds them of something. I'm one of those people. I'm not saying that I'm more holier than thou and that I never, ever, I always enjoy being corrected. To be honest with you, I don't really like it when someone, especially my wife, tells me or reminds me, hey, isn't this something that you said you were going to do? Or do you think it should have been done a little bit different? And she doesn't do it in an arrogant way. She doesn't do it in a way that is going to try to bring glory to herself. She is my helpmate, and I think she does a wonderful job when she reminds me of something. Do I like it to begin with? No. The wise man doesn't mind being corrected, and I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but after thinking about it for a few seconds or a minute or two, normally it's something that needed to be said, and many times it's like, okay, that helped me get it right. Here, responsibility is one thing. Accountability is something completely different. Many people don't mind. Hey, I don't mind being a Sunday school teacher, but don't tell me what time to come. I don't mind singing in the choir, but don't put limitations on what I can and can't do. I don't mind being a bus worker, but don't, you know, tell me I can't speed. You know, different things like that. You know, there's a difference between a responsibility and an accountability. Here, there's a story here, and the king, the prophet was there, and he was saying, okay, Ahab, you did wrong. You know what? That probably wouldn't have bothered Ahab at all. Ahab, okay, I did wrong. I let Ben-Hadad go. What's the big deal? But when they say to the king, it's going to cost you your life and your people for this people, then people get upset. Let's remember this. Remember the privilege we have to serve God, the privilege we have as a believer. But look down the future that someday we will stand before the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and give an account for what we have done in this world with the time we had as a believer. Think about it. Someday we will stand before him and we will give an account. And I think some of us will be disappointed in how we took our responsibilities. And we were not very held accountable sometimes for them. Let's remember this. We have God-given responsibilities. The second thing I want you to think about here is the danger of getting comfortable around sin. The danger of getting comfortable around sin. Remember, the thought of the message is found here being busy here and there. He was gone. It's the thought here that the servant got so busy doing other things. And you never know what he could have been out. If he was out in battle, he could have been helping somebody getting some artillery they need, or he could have been cleaning something up or helping somebody that was wounded. He could have been busy doing a lot of good things, but he let his most important responsibility slip away. The thing that he was accountable for, the thing that should have been most in his life, he let that get away. Now, why do you think that happened? Well, in the story here, the reason why Ahab let Ben-Hadad get away is because he called him something. He called him brother. He was comfortable with being around sin. He looked at Ben-Hadad. He remembered Ben-Hadad. He knew who Ben-Hadad was. He saw what Ben-Hadad had tried to do, and he put himself in the same spot, and he says, you know what? I probably would have done the same thing. He got comfortable with sin, and when he got comfortable with sin, he had no problem with letting someone else just kind of slide by. Ahab had a responsibility that God was going to be holding him accountable for. He was supposed to utterly destroy Ben-Hadad. Well, what does he do? He listens to Ben-Hadad. He likes what Ben-Hadad has to say. And because he likes what Ben-Hadad has to say, he says, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and let you leave. But that was not his responsibility. That was not his choice. The danger of getting comfortable around sin means that we allow sin to grow. God rebukes Ahab for not dealing with the enemy. He pronounces judgment upon him. Instead of repenting, he does not admit that he has done wrong. He does not seek mercy. Instead, he sulks and is very displeased. I think of the story, and I think about how Saul allowed Agag to live because he did most of what God asked him to do. Sin has a devastating effect on a person's life. Sin has a very devastating effect on people's lives. Think about in the day and time we live in. You know, sin is becoming so much familiar with us, we've gotten used to it. I think it was Vance Havner that preached a message, Getting Used to the Dark. And it talks about how we've gotten so used to the dark, gotten so used to sin, we don't like to call sin, sin anymore. And we think about alcohol or liquor, and we think about all the things that's caused problems over the years, and the drunk driving to the families that it's torn apart. But it's a socially accepted thing today, even amongst believers. The homes that have been ruined by alcohol and liquor. Think about the minds that have been scarred by pornography. When we think about the pornography world, you say, Pastor, I would never, ever be a part of that or do something like that. But we have no problem being around people that are pretty much pornographic in what they wear and do. Think about the lives that are destroyed by drugs. You think about the lives that are destroyed by lies. You know, sometimes we've gotten so used to listening to a lie and hearing a lie that when we say a lie, it doesn't even affect us anymore. We just accept it. Oh, my kid lied to me. That's just the way they're going to be. It's because we've gotten used to it. Oh, they shouldn't do that. You know, it's the lies, gossip. You know, how many times do we listen to people gossip and gossip and gossip and don't think there's anything wrong with it? We've just gotten used to it and just say, oh, it's just how we are. You think about not only gossip, we think about laziness, and it's things that we have just gotten so used to it all, we got so comfortable with sin that we will let certain things slide by, the things that are our responsibility, the things that we should be standing for, the things we should be fighting for, the things that we should be holding dear, the things that we should say, this is something I'm responsible for, I'll stand before God someday, I'll be accountable for this, and as being accountable for this, I'm going to make sure I don't get cozied up with sin. Because sin will take our mind and begin to cause us to be a little bit more accepting of it. That's what happened with Ben-Hadad. He let him come up in the chariot. He sat by him. He called him brother. Your brother Ben-Hadad's here. And he talked to him. And he listened to the wisdom of the world. He listened to the wisdom of sin. You know what? I can do this for you. And I can do this for you. And I can do this for you. And he accepted those things. And instead of doing the thing that God had told him to do, that God had delivered him to do, he says, oh, go ahead and go away. It's okay. So I want you to think about it. When we get comfortable with sin, when it comes to this point, that when we're confronted with that truth, we don't like it. You know, when we hear confrontation of truth being preached or told to us in a godly way, the point is to bring us to a point of repentance, a point to where we see our wrong and what we have done against God, and we want to agree with God. But most of the time in the world that we live in today, people are not sorrowful for the fact that they've disappointed and they've done against God's way. They're sorry they got caught. I think about this story, and I read the Ben-Hadad in the first 10 verses, the one that was not willing just to accept the gold and the silver and the wives and the children. He wanted more. What do you think Ben-Hadad would have done to Ahab in that battle? Ben-Hadad would have killed him, just like that. Wouldn't have thought anything about it. He would have just put him to death. He didn't care anything about him. And that's what the devil and sin will do to you. They could care less about your life. They could care less about the pathway you're going down. As long as they can get you focused off of God and you can start saying, okay, this sin's not going to really hurt me, it doesn't matter. Well, you think about the things that the devil did. You think about Saul, the first king of Israel. Where do you see him? You see him at the end of a sword that he dropped on himself. He killed himself. I think about the story of Judas and how he was tricked and betrayed into what the devil had done and what the devil had convinced him to do. And guess what? Where is he at? You see him hanging at the end of a rope. The devastation that happens to so many different people. I think about the story of Cain. I think about, you go through the Bible, you see so many people that have bought into the lies of the devil, and you see where sin had taken them and what the devil cared about them. Don't cozy up with sin, because it's not going to bring the satisfaction you think it's going to bring. Now, is there pleasure in sin for a season? The Bible says there is. But that sin you cozy up with, what's going to happen here, you're going to be messing with that, and you're going to get busy here and there doing things to please your flesh that you're going to miss the thing that someday you're going to be held accountable for. The third thing, not only do we think of a God-given responsibility and the danger of being comfortable around sin, we think about also missed opportunities. Missed opportunities. I have too many of these. And I can tell you a number, at least more than a handful of times, when God spoke into my heart and said, you should have witnessed to that person. Even people today that I know that are, unless someone else witnessed to them, that are in hell today, that God gave me an opportunity to witness to that I chose not to for one reason or another. And I think about these missed opportunities. And you go back to that verse number 40. The servant was busy here and there, and he was gone. You think about that. So many times we get busy with life and be busy here and busy there, and then we turn around and we say, where'd that responsibility go? It was just right there. I had the opportunity. It's not there anymore. Let's put it in a way that we think about it. I turn around and I think my boys when they were little. And when we came here, Andrew, I think, was 1.5. Christian was 3 when we came here. And I turn around now, and I've been busy here and there. And now they're grown up. Well, almost grown up. So they're not there yet. So they're older. And I think most of us would say that about our kids and our grandkids. You know, we turn around, and we're busy providing for them, busy trying to be the cool parent. I don't succeed at that. Busy doing this and busy doing that. We forget the importance of training up a child in the way he should go. And the Bible talks about the responsibility of a parent in Ephesians 6:4. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And, you know, once again, we can be busy teaching them how to play ball, or teaching them how to do some type of hobby, and teaching them good things. I can be busy over here going to games. I can be busy over here driving them back and forth from lessons. I can be busy doing all these things, but I forget the most important thing. And when I turn around and say, you know, I wanted to teach them the things of God. I want to teach them the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, can you do that while being a sports parent? Yes. Can you do that while having a well-rounded child? Of course you can. But so many times it seems like we get busy over here and we get busy over there, and life seems like it's so complicated with so many different things that we miss the most important thing. I wrote down a couple of things. Sometimes we get so busy with entertainment that we don't read our Bible and pray as we should. We get busy over here. We get busy over there, and so many different opportunities. Many times, many wonderful opportunities that are out there that we miss the most important. We are so busy sometimes trying to be a friend, we never give them the gospel. And that's been my case sometimes. I think that I got to befriend them. I think I got to spend the time getting to know them. But after that half hour, hour up, and they have to leave and they got to go, they miss the most important thing, their soul. And it's important to remember. Sometimes we're busy providing that we forget to give the love that is needed. So many times we get busy with other things, including good things, that we lose out on the most important things, the things that God commands us. Remember, the commandments that God has given us. And when we get cozied up with sin and we let sin infiltrate our life and we get close to it, we start getting busy with this part and busy with that part, busy here and busy there. It's gone. The opportunity that we had to learn of God and see God move and work in our lives, it's gone. How many of us in every single day this happens sometimes? when we say, okay, I'm going to read my Bible in a little while. I should have time here around 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock comes and goes. Oh, I didn't get it. What about 1 o'clock? 1 o'clock comes and goes. And you get up and it's late at night, time to go to bed. And you're like, I got to read my Bible now. And you try to read it while you're half asleep. And you're like, well, maybe tomorrow. I'm going to make sure I make the best of that opportunity. And guess what? We get busy here. We wake up a little bit late. Got to eat breakfast. It's the most important meal of the day, they say. And then I got to be at work on time. And I got to do this. And I got to do that. And we get busy here and there. And we miss. It's gone. You think about some people who missed opportunities in the Bible. I think of the countless those who missed the opportunity to turn to God. Think of those Noah preached to. Sad story. Think about even Herod, Felix, Judas. All chose not to take the opportunity they had to hear of God and believe. Think about Barak missing the opportunity to being a leader. Think about those who could have killed Goliath. David was the young man who did, but there's many who had the opportunity. I think of the children of Israel going into the promised land. They didn't go because they didn't have faith. But I think about the group that did go, the missed opportunities they had for all the different lands. I don't know about you. I don't want to live my life, and at the end of my life, I go and say, man, I was so busy here, and I was so busy there, I miss the opportunity God had for me. The story I came across from a couple different people when I was reading and studying about missed opportunities. It says, the other day I ran across a story of a man who had a great opportunity that he missed. His friend took him for a ride one day all the way out in the country. They drove off the main road and drove through groves of trees to a large inhabited expanse of a land. He said there was a few horses there grazing and a couple old shacks that remained. The friend named Walter stopped the car, got out, and started to describe with great vividness the wonderful things he was going to build. He wanted his friend, Arthur, to buy some of the land surrounding the project to get in on the ground floor. But Arthur thought to himself, who in the world is going to drive 25 miles for this type of crazy project? The logistics of the venture were staggering. And so Walter explained to his friend Arthur. He says, I can handle the main project myself, but it will take all my money. But the land bordering it, where we're standing now, will in just a couple years be jammed with hotels and restaurants and convention halls to accommodate the people who will come and spend their entire vacation here at my park. He continued, I want you to have the first chance at the surrounding acreage because in 5 years, it will increase in value several hundred times. He said, what could I say? I thought he was wrong. Arthur tells a story today. He says, I knew that he had let this dream get the best of his common sense. So I mumbled something about a tight money situation and promised that I would look at the whole thing a little bit later. He said, later on will be too late. Walter cautioned Arthur as they walked back to the car. You better move on this right now. So Art Linkletter turned down the opportunity to buy up all the land that surrounded what we know as Disneyland. And his friend Walt Disney tried to talk him into it, but Art thought he was crazy. It was a missed opportunity. And it was a missed opportunity for them to become more wealthy. But we think about the opportunities we miss many times that are so much more valuable. The opportunity we have to reach someone for Christ. The opportunity we have to influence someone with our testimony. The opportunities we have as a parent, as a mate, as even a child, grandchild, but the opportunities even as just a regular believer. The Word of God is here for us to learn and grow from. We can study it and understand it. How many times do we get busy here and there and we don't even read it? I don't know what greater opportunity we have and privilege we have than prayer. We can talk to the Almighty God. He's on our speed dial, you could say. And we get busy here, we get busy there, and we miss the opportunity. On Wednesday night, I talked about a 40-day challenge with some of with the people that were here on Wednesday night, and I challenged them to journal how much Bible study and how much prayer time they've been putting in for 40 days. And there's some other things. There's some notebooks in the back if anyone's interested in that. But I know that many times when I've done that, I don't do it to try to make it about numbers, because it's not about numbers. But it humbles me to think in 24 hours in a day, I have this much opportunity to serve my Lord. I have this much opportunity to spend time. Obviously, I'm not going to spend the whole day reading. I'm not going to spend the whole day praying. But the Bible does say pray without ceasing. The Bible does say meditate on it day and night. I'm going to spend a good part of my day with God in my mind and with God in my thought process. And I'm going to meditate on the scriptures. And so it humbles me when I consider of these 24 hours, I have spent 5 minutes, 10 minutes with the privilege that God's given me. And sometimes 5 or 10 minutes is more than what many do. And I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty. I'm just trying to show you here's an opportunity that many of us miss. And it's because we're busy here and we're busy there. And we get cozied up with sin sometimes that we say, oh, it's okay. It's not a big deal. I'm just going to let it go this time. But we do have a God-given responsibility. And someday we will be held accountable, just like Ahab. It's a parable here. He told him a story. This happened and this happened. What do you think? Let's make sure we're being good with our responsibilities. Let God work in our hearts too. I see this hard-hearted man. I don't know. He watched fire come down from heaven. He watched the people bow down and say, yes, he is God. He watched a little army of 7,000 defeat an army of six figures. He watched a little army once again defeat another great army. And he still doesn't see why he needs to get right. His heart was so hard. God kept on saying, I want you to know that I'm God. I want you to know that I'm God. I want you to know that I'm God. He said it multiple times in the same chapter, in the same situation. But he never says, okay, I know you're God, and I should listen to what you have to say. He missed the opportunity to get right. Don't miss that opportunity tonight. If God's been working and dealing in your heart about something, don't miss that opportunity. Don't go away. As he talked about at the end, he went away. He was displeased. He was unhappy. He was a pouter. You're going to learn that in the next chapter. He started pouting because he couldn't have somebody's vineyard. He became upset with the prophet. He came upset with a message instead of becoming upset with himself. Don't miss the opportunity. Man, we have the opportunity to be right with the Creator. We have the opportunity to serve Him. We have the opportunity to be Spirit-filled. We have the opportunity to show people how they can go to heaven. We have the opportunity to influence our world for Christ. Let's go ahead and stand to our feet. Heads bowed and eyes closed for a time.